What impact does the fighting in Sudan have on Libya? There are fears the conflict could disrupt the precarious situation next door. Libya's war led to a political stalemate that continues to fester. Is Sudan heading the same way? This is Inside Story. Hello and welcome to the program. I'm Tom McCrae. The conflict in Sudan is now in its third week. The rival generals are playing the blame game, accusing each other of targeting civilian neighbourhoods, hospitals and people trying to leave the country. Ceasefire after ceasefire has collapsed. Analysts fear powerful regional players may be involved behind the scenes, intentionally prolonging the violence. Some have drawn parallels to the situation in neighbouring Libya. We'll unpack this with our guests in a moment. But first, this report from Nihad al-Abidi.
Two generals who can't agree have instead resorted to violence. The rivalry between Sudan's army chief Abdel Fattah al-Burhan and Mohamed Hamdan Dagalo, known as Hameti, who leads the Rapid Support Forces. It's fueling further involvement of regional and international players.
The situation is very bad, actually. The RSF forces, the militia, are occupying the streets, even some of the houses, even major of the city, very important places, which can't let the people access their daily needs, because there is no moral on this war. There is no great mission in this war. It's only for the power and money, nothing more.
One of the most significant is Khalifa Haftar, a Libyan warlord who's in control of much of the eastern part of the country. He's believed to have close ties to Hameti. Some reports suggest Haftar helped train his paramilitary RSF before the fighting broke out mid-April. Earlier this month, one of Haftar's sons visited Khartoum to donate $2 million to a football club linked to Hameti. Haftar has denied taking sides, but observers have pointed to his order to detain a deputy of Moussa Hilal, a known enemy of Hameti. The civil war that began in Libya in 2011 ultimately led to the toppling and killing of Muammar Gaddafi. Sudanese fighters were reportedly involved in the conflict. It divided the country into two administrations, the internationally recognized government of national unity in the west, and in the east, a parliament aligned with Haftar. And that discord has fueled instability in the region. Sudan and Libya are positioned on major maritime trade routes for the movement of not only legal but also illegal goods. Inland, the town of Gufra connects Libya, Chad and Sudan by road. Recent media reports quote witnesses saying planes landing at its airport were carrying weapons, which were then loaded onto trucks travelling towards Sudan. Hameti and Haftar enjoy support from the same international backers, influential figures in Russia and the UAE. But the similarities go even further, and it's feared that Sudan may be following in Libya's footsteps, as both generals seem hungry for power at any cost. Nihad al-Abidi for Inside Story.
Well, for more on this, let's welcome our guests today. In London, Benoit Faucon, Middle East correspondent at the Wall Street Journal in Khartoum. Hamid Khalifa'ala, non-resident fellow at the Tahrir Institute for Middle East Policy. And also in London, Jason Pack, a senior analyst at the NATO Defence College Foundation and author of Libya and the Global Enduring Disorder. Thank you all very much for joining me. Benoit, if I can begin with you. You broke the story about Haftar's involvement in the Rapid Special Forces before and since the war has broken out. Can you just give us a little bit more of the detail in your story and some specific examples of his involvement so far?
Yeah, I mean, first of all, you know, the historical context being that between General Dagalo and General Haftar, there's an history, of alliance. General Dagalo helped, you know, Marshal Haftar in the past, mm-hmm. In his failed attempt to take over Tripoli. They also have a common friend historically, which is the United Arab Emirates. Again, General Dagalo helped the UAE in its war in Yemen against rebels, and Marsha Haftar was also allied with the UAE. UAE supported him in the war in Libya. So that's kind of the background, the historical background, which explains why subsequently, when General Dagalo, whose nickname is also Hemeti, started the war, he sought help from Haftar and received ammunition from the south of Libya into Sudan.
Yes. So what has happened now? Like in the days leading up to the war, how has Haftar been involved in helping Dagalo?
Well, he brought ammunition from the northeast, where its sort of main area of operation is, into an airport into the south near the Chadian and Sudan border. And from there, there was an initial flight that subsequently was mostly by land that he was transported into Darfur. And we understand there were, he was obviously detected by a number of foreign powers. There were drones, obviously, flying over Darfur that detected the convoys. And there were very strong words, from what I understand, from countries like Egypt, but also from the US, about not letting that conflict become a regional conflict with the support of neighbors, including General Marshal Haftar. So that, we understand, General Dagalo got, received a lot of pressure, and so did General Marshal Haftar over that that support.
Okay, Jason, what's your reaction to Haftar's involvement? Do you think that this is just the beginning?
Well, I want to build on that excellent background that my friend Benoit has explained. I would make yet a further comparison or analysis between Libya and Sudan by saying Sudan is on the same track that Libya has been following, just 8 years further down the line. What do I mean? There was a popular uprising, civil society activists. It was successful. Mm-hmm. And then a transitional council and a transitional government trying to move towards democracy. And then what do you know? That all fell apart because of the forces of what I term the global enduring disorder. And this is the era in which it's impossible for Western nations to do collective action. The U.S. isn't doing leadership. And regional powers like the UAE, as we've heard from Benoit, and Egypt and Turkey and Qatar are all pulling in different directions. So the interesting twist is, as Benoit explained, that the UAE and Egypt were on the same side in supporting Haftar in Libya, but they're on opposite sides mm-hmm. in the Sudan conflict. And they're pulling in different directions without the West providing any unifying structures. And of course, Sudan is going to be falling apart. Then when you add in the ability to smuggle gold and to smuggle refined petrol from Libya into Sudan, and you have all the makings of a state breakdown and a state implosion. So if you wait some years, you can imagine that Sudan will be like Libya, without state institutions, with many different semi-sovereign actors, each with their own little monopolies on violence and smuggling.
Mm. I mean, you're in Sudan, obviously, and we're glad that you're safe for the moment, and we hope that it continues. I mean, you're living through the repercussions of all of this. What's the reaction been there to the idea that Haftar is getting involved with the rapid support forces at this point in time?
Yeah, I would also start just quickly by saying I don't necessarily think that Sudan and Libya share the same path, or Sudan is going down the Libyan path just a few years later. The Sudanese political economy is very different to the Libyan political economy, and the actors and the context and the dynamics are also very different, but also the way Sudan's transition has been going and now has faced challenges is very different to what was happening in Libya. There are some similarities, but I think it's difficult to say that they're going down the same line. As far as the involvement of Libya or Haftar specifically in the Sudanese context, there have been these worries. Obviously, we know that Haftar's elder son was in Khartoum just a few days before the war erupted for some ceremonial thing where he became an honorary president, president of a football club, and donated $2 million. It was all quite bizarre, but he did meet with the leader of Himeti, the leader of the Iraq Support Forces, paramilitary, and so on. So there have been these worries, particularly when there are growing concerns about the involvement of Wagner in Khartoum, and all of that obviously kind of suggests that the theories about Haftar being also quite involved and still involved becoming stronger and stronger. But there isn't a strong sentiment or narrative in country in Khartoum around that yet, because so far, although there are these regional dimensions, but everything that the way the conflict is playing out in Khartoum now is quite localized. All the reasons we understand in a very local and Sudanese kind of way. But it's important to keep an eye on these regional dimensions. But they have not become a strong worry of the Sudanese people yet, as far as I'm aware.
I guess they're just concerned about trying to stay alive day to day. Benoit, what is your reaction, I mean, to Haftar's involvement here? I mean, how long-term, how do you think if he continues to provide, you know, potentially more weapons, fuel, even military personnel, what do you think that is going to do to the conflict?
Well, I would say that's it's a proposal, or let's say it's an action. You know, the Libyan sort of faction here intervening in the war in Sudan that may not be sustainable because, you know, it has to function. It has always functioned as part of the broader network of alliances, as I mentioned, for instance, the UAE. And to me, it sounds that the overall interest of foreign powers, you know, let's say GCC countries, obviously European nations and the US, is really for this conflict not to last. You know, there's an issue of food security, potentially. I mean, the UAE and Saudi Arabia, you know, have kind of very strong ambitions, you know, either for ports or for, you know, for supply of food for their countries from Sudan. And that's obviously jeopardized if it becomes an entirely unstable country, not to mention the risk of a refugee crisis. You know, there's too many issues, and I haven't started even with terrorism and the fact that there is a large part of the Nile that crosses through Sudan all the way to the north to you know, to Egypt. So yes, at the end of the day, the broader, you know, larger regional interest and international interest beyond local factions in the neighborhood is really for that conflict to end.
Okay, Jason, I mean, just one last point on Haftar's connection to Dagalo. I mean, can you give us a little bit of a sense of their history? Because obviously they have a very strong shared history, but is there trust or any loyalty between the two of them?
Well, that's a good point. They do have a shared history. Obviously, the Emiratis have paid Hemedti, General Dagalo, to fight in Libya with Haftar. Mm-hmm. And they're both militia groups who tried to overthrow the official state institutions, but had formerly worked within those institutions. It's important to remember that when Hemedti was running the Janjaweed, he was doing so on behalf of the official state institutions. Omar Bashir essentially used him as an outsourced proxy for himself. And Haftar, of course, had been a general for Gaddafi. So they understand these structures from many different perspectives, and they have the same Emirati handlers. I don't think that either of them will put personal loyalty over their transactional desire to win and gain things. And if the Egyptians threaten Haftar, he can switch sides. That's, of course, true. I just want to push back on the idea that our guest from Khartoum has said, which is that the regional dynamic is not paramount in the fighting. If the U.S. and U.K. had wanted to mediate this situation after the 2019 uprising, had given massive economic assistance to help the transition to democracy, we wouldn't be in this situation. If there was Western leadership working with, for example, China to make sure that the Russians couldn't play around and participate in gold smuggling, we wouldn't be in this situation. So we're only in this situation in Sudan because the global enduring disorder, the era that we're now living in, promotes conflicts like that civil war in Libya, like the ongoing civil wars in Yemen and Syria. And that's why we're here where we are.
Hamid, do you agree with that point, that there's a vacuum being left by the West?
Well, I think the West has definitely contributed to the situation that we're living in now. Ever since the revolution took place, they have continued to legitimize the generals, the leader of the RSF and the leader of the armed forces, by giving them seats at the table and allowing them to be part of the discussion, and also pushing the civilians to accept the partnership with these generals. And even after the coup that both General Burhan and General Hemeti launched together back in October 2021, the West still did allow them the space and gave them the trust, although they never proved to be worthy of that trust. Mm-hmm. That is definitely something that the West contributed to. But what I meant by that is that the way these institutions, the Rapid Support Forces and the Sudanese Armed Forces, were created initially, they were created to work against each other. Although they were created to work side by side, but essentially they were created to work against each other. Bashir wanted to protect himself from the armed forces, but also wanted a militia to fight for him. So it was going to happen in a way or another, this falling out of their marriage of convenience. It was not going to last. But we did not expect it, or we were hoping it would not be as violent as it has turned out to be. But these institutions were, you know, built to kill each other in a way.
Mm. I know you can't see him, Hamid, but Jason throughout that was giving you the thumbs up. I think he is in agreement with most of what you were saying there.
That's exactly right. And I think that was a great way of explaining it. Hamid, thank you. It's that the forces that brought that marriage of convenience together couldn't sustain it, because we live in this disordered world where many factions are pulling in different directions. And stupidly, Western foreign policy gave power to the generals without enough threats. These are the sanctions you're going to face if you defy what we've agreed. This is the punishment you're going to have if you derail a transition to democracy. But the lack of leadership in capitals like London and Brussels and Washington has allowed this splintering, whereby regional powers can pick sides and can disorder things. And I believe firmly that it's not just the Russians, but there are many actors who are happy for this conflict to continue quasi-indefinitely.
Mm. Benoit, just while we're talking about the Russians, Haftar's been backed by Russia. I mean, he's hosted Wagner Group at his bases in Libya. And as we've spoken about before, Dogalo has lucrative gold mining partnerships with the Russian mercenary group. I mean, is there any indication at all that anyone's been able to work out that Haftar's involvement in Sudan is backed by Russia, is supported by Russia at this point?
I would say at this stage, Haftar didn't need the nudge from the Russians. The Russians had their own networks in Sudan, very well established, like you mentioned, connected to gold exports to Russia. A very strong historical relation with General Dagalo Hemeti. For instance, you know, he says himself publicly that, you know, his forces were trained in 2019, you know, by Wagner. So he didn't need a nudge, but he was approached by Wagner. I mean, the epicenter of Wagner in the region is really right now more in Bangui. South African Republic shares a border with Sudan. So there were very strong, you know, proposal for assistance. But he's been also very nervous by that connection. I mean, both the Russian official connection after the trip he had last year, he knows it didn't go well internationally, and the Wagner connection. So he's not going to make it overt. He's not going to make it official. That's too toxic, because that means potentially sanctions, international sanctions on him.
Do you, Jason, agree with that point?
For sure.
Yeah. Okay, Hamid, I mean, just moving on slightly, I mean, outside of trying to negotiate a long-lasting ceasefire or any sort of peace deal, I mean, what's the mood inside Sudan at the moment in regards to any outside involvement from any of these groups or countries? I mean, is the thought there that the more involvement from outside, the longer that this war is going to go on?
Absolutely. I think the general narrative right now is you know, aside to in addition to ending the war now and so on, is ending it in a good time before it allows for more intervention from regional actors. You know, like I said earlier, I think there is, you know, very documented and important and problematic regional interventions in the current Sudanese conflict, in the build-up for it and how it's out there now. But so far, there is no enough evidence of them actively being on ground, or at least it's very limited. And everyone is trying to keep it at this limit and to end the war at this limit. Otherwise, if there is more involvement, if there are more powers are coming to play out some proxy wars in Sudanese grounds and so on, it's going to be very catastrophic for these people. So they're very, determined to end this now before it turns into that, and also before it becomes a civil war. So far, it's a power struggle between these two generals, and the society is not necessarily dragged into that war by becoming an active part or player in that war. So stopping any militarization of the communities and dragging them into that civil war using whatever ethnic or tribal kind of narratives would eventually lead to more regional actors intervening. Everyone is trying to end that immediately before it turns into something that spreads across the region and would be very difficult to control then.
Yeah. Jason, you're our expert on Libya. What are the ramifications for Libya if this war does continue to drag on and on and drag in other players from in the region?
Well, I don't think that the implications for Libya are that profound. Libya is already a non-state whereby various militias control the majority of the territory. The central bank governor is allied with Turkey. The head of the National Oil Corporation is aligned with the UAE. It's entirely a penetrated and failed state. If it has another failed state on its border, it doesn't have much blowback. Yes, it's slightly negative. It allows for more smuggling of petrol into Sudan and smuggling of mercenaries from Sudan back into Libya. So it's a minor destabilizing factor. I think that the global enduring disorder, which we have all around us, is so much more of a factor for Libya than just, you know, another failed state, whether it was Mali before or Sudan now. To go back to that earlier point that we heard from in Khartoum, which is that, you know, it's not a civil war yet. I think it's important to point out that there are ethnic and tribal differences between, say, the supporters of the army who come from the riverine elite and the north, and then the more peripheral ethnic groups who are connected to the RSF and Hemeti. And you're going to have not only regional powers, but local powers who, to want to win, try to provoke and mobilize their base. So in the absence of global leadership, I don't see how we can't have the Clausewitzian dictum, which is that war inherently escalates to the maximum extent possible, coming into play, and this moving more towards a civil conflict, just as we've seen in Libya, where the 2014-2015 war for the Tripoli airport was not something that polarized the society, but then the 2019-2020 war was more hitting at social fissures and more intense. So I think we're seeing that dimension play out in Sudan. And unless there's a massive international intervention with strong sanctions and penalties, I don't see how we can get this back on track.
Benoit, just before we finish up in the next few minutes, do you think that this is going to escalate? Things are going to get worse before they get better?
Yeah, if you think about the chess game, you think the escalation is a state of the test of strength that each party needs to show before they run out of ammunition or strength, and come to the table. First, you want to show how far you can go, almost in a fight to death. Until you're really exhausted, and then you go to the table and you draw some agreement. But I think you're not there right now. There's still a lot of ammunition and force on the ground able to fight before they get to that point where they feel they need to talk.
Hamid, do you think that that is going to be the way that this plays out? That the two sides are just going to fight to the death, like Benoit was saying, or do you think that there has to be international intervention to try and bring this to a close?
I think the way this is, it's going to play out. Both generals are not ready to end this fight yet. So they should they be allowed, they will continue the war. They will continue to bring in regional allies and to get them more actively involved within the neighboring countries, but beyond as well, more transnational allies, and that would be catastrophic. However, I think the international community is not acting as quick as possible, but they are starting to act a little bit more now in terms of using the leverage that they have over a lot of these regional allies to end this war now before it escalates into something terrible. On the local front and so on, there have been a lot of initiatives, a unified civilian front, anti-war civilian front has been established a couple of days ago, bringing together all different political actors, political parties, resistance committees, civil society, and so on, to say three messages, basically: no to war and no to all the ethnic and tribal narratives that have appeared now and would risk dragging the whole country into a full-blown civil war. And to make sure that, this war, when it ends, it does not also compromise the democratization agenda, that we want to restore the democratic transition once this war is ends. So there are a lot of efforts internally and externally to halt this war that the generals are very determined about taking on until the end.
Okay, thank you so much. We really do hope that this conflict in some way, shape or form can come to an end as quickly as possible. Benoît Faucon, thank you. Hamid Khalif Allah and Jason Pack, thank you very much for joining us on Inside Story today. Well, and thank you too for watching. You can see the program again anytime by visiting our website, aljazeera.com. And for further discussion, go to our Facebook page. That's facebook.com/AJInsideStory. You can also join the conversation on Twitter. Our handle is @AJInsideStory. From me, Tom McRae, and the whole team here, bye for now.